Yo.
What up? What up?
Ooh, what up, though?
Welcome to the Midnight Hour.
Let's go.
Yeah, we had to get back on track. Do what we do at the times that we do.
That's right. Make a hit correctly.
For real. Bro, it's funny. I was watching a YouTube video last week.
Yeah.
And I saw myself, and I haven't had a carb since. I was like, God damn it.
Oh, and you know, I was telling you too, man, that I'm fucking... So, you know, 10 years ago, man, I did the fucking super shred diet with you, right? I was like 39, turning 40, wanted to be sort of back down to a better weight. And I'm doing it again, not the super shred diet, but doing the shred diet this time. Not near as heavy as I was when I was 39, but definitely want to drop down to fight weight, 205, baby. Let's go.
Yo, that's still is that heavyweight or is that light heavy?
I don't know. For me, it's the fucking right weight. Goddammit. Welcome back, everybody, to the Carpet Flipping Podcast. He is Juan and I'm Sean, and every week we get together, have a few drinks, talk about things going on in the world, try to focus on things making an impact, whether they be good, bad, or otherwise. Hit them with a drink of the day.
Ooh, yep. We're doing like an old classic cocktail, which I think we did this very early on in the pod. I can't remember. But I wanted to do...
We've done it before.
Yeah. I was craving a Negroni. Yeah, I know we've done it, but I couldn't remember if we'd done it on a pod or like on a fight night or, you know, whatever. But
both.
We had to. Yeah, probably both. But it's been a minute. And I went down this rabbit hole on the Negronis, and I've been craving a Negroni lately. But I wanted to try... Like, I've usually done the... You know, stereotypical. Obviously, you do the gin and you do the Campari and you do a vermouth. And the vermouth, everybody does the Martini and Rossi one. And that's usually like the most common one found.
That's what we did. That's what we've done before.
Yeah, it's what we've done in the past. And so what I wanted to do was sort of like add a little higher end vermouth and maybe a slightly better gin. So we did this Tanqueray number 10, which is just a slight level above their normal Tanqueray, like regular Tanqueray. And then for the vermouth, we did this Carpano Classic, which...
It's good.
It's really good, man. And it's funny. It's triple the price of the Martini and Rossi. It's still nice, but the Martini and Rossi is like $10 a bottle.
That's, okay.
Yeah. So it sounds worse than what it is. It's not crazy. No. But it is really good, man. It made a difference. And the Campari is the Campari. But one of the things I noticed is with Negronis in the past is that if you use a botanical gin like a Hendrick's and all that, they don't come out as good. There's something about like the flowery stuff that doesn't really sit well with the Negronis because you want sort of a bitter... almost citrusy mix in there. Okay. And so, which is why I suck to like the Tanqueray. I know Beefeater is good too.
I wonder if the Rank Pour would be good.
Dude, I want to try that, man.
Right?
The Rank Pour Lime
or even
the Seville Orange one.
Yep.
And I know like a lot of people, like a lot of the Negroni sort of connoisseurs will tell you, yeah, you don't want to do the flavored, you know, gins. But I got to say, man, like we muddled an orange. So we'll get to it. So in a glass, we muddled and actually Sean put me onto the Sumo Orange, which is delicious.
Sumo Mandarin.
Is it a Mandarin?
It's a Mandarin.
Oh, so yep. Sumo Mandarin. So we garnish, Jesus Christ, I can't talk. I've had too many. We muddled a Sumo Mandarin at the bottom, just a wedge. We added ice and then added an ounce of each one. Added an ounce of Tanqueray 10,
ooh, okay,
an ounce of the Carpano Classico vermouth, and then an ounce of Campari, and stir it really well, garnish with a little orange peel, and that's it, man. It's simple. One in one in ice, muddle the Mandarin, and this is fantastic. It's good. I mean, I like Negronis, but it is definitely better. Slightly better than the regular Negroni.
Yeah, no, and I've had them, you know, with you before, and I liked them before, but this one is better. And then muddling that orange, that Sumo Mandarin. If you guys have seen it, if you've been to the supermarket lately, it's these oranges that the skin is a little, it's almost like extra wrinkly, and it has like a nipple on the top.
Yeah,
like a big nipple.
Yeah,
like a big nipple. But they are freaking delicious.
I was uncomfortable buying it. I'm gonna be honest with you. I felt dirty.
And then you only bought two. And they was looking at you funny at the register.
I did. And I'm all like, feel this one.
Like, why?
You think this one's right?
Why? Why you only get two?
I'm like, mind your business.
But the oranges themselves are phenomenal, and then the fact that we muddled it at the bottom was just, I don't know, that sweetness of the mandarin orange fucking just hit.
Dude, it made a difference because I was just gonna do the wedge or just the peel, and then you had the idea to muddle it, and it changed it, man. It's so good. The first time I had a Negroni was in New York.
Okay.
And it was at an Italian place, and obviously that's their jam.
Oh, right.
And you know, he made me like a traditional one, and I think he did use beef eater and the vermouth and the Campari. He used the Martini and Rossi, but there's a level up. I can't remember what it's called now, so I don't want to say the name wrong, but it's like Martini and Rossi has one level up. And it was a great Negroni, and I remember trying it at home. I love this cocktail. It's one of those things, though, that I don't do a lot because two of them just fucks you up. Like, it's like, this is so much liquor in it because it's like 3, 3, and 3. You're like, oh, I've had a cocktail and a half just in one. And so,
yeah.
But it's so good. I like
really
it.
Two, right?
Three ounces. Right? Well, usually you do 2 ounces. You could do a shot and a half.
Shot and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or ounce and a half.
So, yeah. So it could be two cocktails. So you do one and you're like 10. You do two and usually you're feeling amazing. Mm-hmm. So I tried not to do them as much, but it is a great drink if you're having one and, you know, you're watching, you know, something at home, or you just want to unwind. Yeah. It's fantastic. And I love the flavor. I love everything bitter. Try this out. Really simple. One and one. You guys can take the regular Tanqueray. Just try to stay away from anything botanical. Do the Martini and Rossi and it'll be just fine. I just wanted to sort of elevate this one a little bit. And it's good. And I think it paid off.
No, yeah. The vermouth definitely made a difference. Mm-hmm. Because it does. It was even without the orange. Like in the beginning, when you first gave it to me, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is good. Like this is different."
Yeah, and then you don't want to do like the gins. You don't want to get too wild because you don't want each one to overpower the other thing. Like what I have found too with different gins is that if you get a gin that's really bold and really strong, or like the botanical gins, is that then you taste too much of the gin and you don't get to taste the vermouth or you don't get to taste the Campari. And I feel like this one, none of the flavors sort of overwhelm one another. I think it complements each other really, really well. Good. Yeah, yeah. So
try it out, people.
Try this out, guys. So I don't even know. It's a Negroni. We'll call it like the CFP Negroni or whatever. We'll figure something out.
All right, man. The carbon footprint this week is going out to Mr. John Sterling. For those of you who don't know, John Sterling is a radio play-by-play announcer for the New York Yankees. He's 85 years old. He is not dead.
Dude, is he 85?
85.
Holy shit, I didn't realize.
He just retired. And so we want to give him his flowers, while he's still alive. So he was Yankees announcer from 1989 to 2024, right? And A couple of facts about him. Man.
Is he finishing the season?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. Is he finishing this season, or did he just walk away in the middle of the season?
I thought he had some kind of health issue.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Just and like, okay, it's enough.
Yeah.
So he called 5,060 consecutive Yankee games from 89 to 2019.
Wow, man.
Which is insane.
That's insane. Man. I love this because it isn't just a sports thing. I think if you're not a Yankee fan, it doesn't hit to you as much. But like me growing up, this is a hardcore Yankee fan. Like his calls as a kid, like I remember so vividly, like we were talking before, like I've probably texted you during big Yankee games, even maybe after a playoff win, Yankees win, duh. And that was like his thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, that prolonged like the Yankees. And then his home run calls are what he was known.
Dude, he's been announcing for them almost your whole life.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Which
3 years after I was born.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's insane.
So you figured the entire time I've ever watched the Yankees is the only guy I've ever.
He's the guy you've known.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so for me,
Michael K. Wright was the was, but in for the radio, man. Like, and what's cool, what I didn't know was that so he was born John Sloss. He actually changed his name along the way.
Okay,
to John Sterling, but. He's a New Yorker. He grew up on the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Oh.
I don't know exactly where, but I do remember that. So like where I'm from, which is like, I was from like 104th, right? So like, it's like East Harlem, Spanish Harlem.
Yeah, Spanish Harlem. Okay.
As I was growing up. But I know that my mom, when she lived there as a kid, she said the whole place was mostly like Italians, like it was mostly whites in that area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I don't know if he was like kind of grew up in that area. I don't know exactly where he's from, but Upper East Side. So how cool is it to grow up in New York, probably grow up as a Yankee fan, and then end up announcing for them for, you know, 30 plus years?
Yeah, dude, and then get a dynasty run with the Yankees. And he
got there right, like at the perfect time. Yeah, the
perfect time, right? You got to see Mattingly, and then you got to see the Marianos and the Jeters, and see these guys go through their career. Yeah, man, what a time. And I think for him, it's more of just that iconic voice. I know if you don't watch sports, you don't watch the Yankees, you don't care, but there's a thing when you were even, I was listening to something this week, I think it was SportsCenter or something, where they were talking about even the new Yankees coming on, like I think Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton, where they were looking forward to, man, I can't wait to see what he does with my home run call, because he does a unique thing. You know, like the A-Rod thing was like an A-bomb from A-Rod, and he would like prolong like this whole, and it was like cool, and he would have a unique one, and some of them were like cheesy and corny, but they were just like his thing.
Yeah, I thought always his Gleyber Torres one. Oh. He was like, "Oh, it's Gleyber Day."
Yeah, Gleyber Day.
Or like a good neighbor. Gleyber's there. But he had the iconic it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like.
But I think because he took the time to do something unique for each player and all that stuff, I think that's what they look forward to. Like, man, I wonder what he's gonna do for me. And it was cool because if you're in baseball at all and you knew you were going to the Yankees, he was part of the experience of being in pinstripes, of, you know, like the whole mystique behind the Yankees is a lot of it was like old Yankee Stadium. Obviously, you know, the Yankees do things unlike a lot of sports organizations. They still have a dress code. They do really weird things. I don't necessarily agree with all of it.
The hair.
Yeah. The Yankees are still very much
they're businessmen.
They're buttoned up. They're businessmen. Yes. Yeah. Which is very different. I think this team now is having a little more fun, which is unlike Yankee teams. But anyway, so I think he was part of that experience of the when you go to the Yankees, this is also part of it. Yeah. So, end of an era. What a career, man, what that guy had. And again, I mean, obviously for my childhood and my adult life, and that's the guy that I heard calling Yankee games. And there's so many memorable moments. Dude, the Derek Jeter flip. You know, when called Mr. November or whatever is like one that stands out, where he was coined like Mr. November. Yep. Was that late game six or whatever it was.
Which was a phrase that was coined for Reggie Jackson.
For Mr. October.
And Mr. October, that's what it was.
Yeah,
that's
Reggie Jackson was Mr. October.
Sorry.
And then
the
World Series never carries into November, but this was one of the late game sevens. Or game six. I think this was six where Derek Jeter did that iconic flip to home base on a cutoff throw. Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, so he...
Oh, that was so good.
It was so good, man. But I just remember, like, these calls with him throughout the years where I was like, wow, that was his voice. And Michael Kay, man. Michael Kay, as well, when you're watching on TV through Yes Network, you know, living in that area, he was another one who had just iconic calls, man. And more than that, I think just someone that you resonate with. You hear that voice and you immediately takes you back to a time. Yeah, and I think very few people in life do that, man. Like, I go, it isn't just the fact that I'm a Yankee dork and whatever. It's like, there's you know, you hear stuff from him. Like, you know, you talk about the Gleyber thing, but there's certain calls of him that you hear and you can feel that moment. And so I think that's...
I think he's one of those sort of iconic. I mean, obviously, I think it's... You definitely heard his voice, whether you're a Yankee fan or not, if you watch baseball.
Yeah.
But for me... It's almost like a Chris Berman.
Yeah.
It was, you know, like there's so many of those, right? You know, he could go all the way, like those sort of iconic things that's what John Sterling did for my life. So I didn't know, man, the guy won like 12 Emmy Awards as well.
Well, I didn't realize.
Yeah. So it's crazy. So outstanding career, man. Thank you, John Sterling, for, you know, providing that entertainment. And those calls for all those years, especially for New York Yankee fans.
Yeah. Shout out John Sterling, man. And hopefully, I mean, the health issues, nothing crazy, and he gets to enjoy a little bit of that retirement.
And I didn't get the feel that it was something like, oh my God, I'm gonna die soon.
Just
like,
you know, couldn't do his job to his expectation.
Or like maybe it's just time.
Yeah.
You know
what, man? Sometimes there's guys like that who I respect and admire how they handle things like that, because they're like, yeah, I can't give this what it deserves or what it needs or what I'm used to giving it and people are used to getting from me. And so they're like, yep, just going to walk away. But yeah, shout out to him, man. The again, I think for me, it's nostalgic. Like I was just telling someone, but I remember the last time the Yankees won the World Series, obviously 2009, which it feels closer than that, but it's 15 years ago.
Wow.
But the reason I remember is I do remember specific cause. I remember them winning. I remember that last out against the Phillies, but it was my daughter was just born and she was maybe a month. I don't think she was quite a month yet. And we had just gotten her home from NICU. And I remember holding my daughter screaming and then going, oh fuck, I have an infant, and like trying to put her down. And then, like the nighttime feeding, staying up with my daughter and just celebrating because they had just won the World Series. And it's like me and my daughter, like my infant daughter, who had no fucking clue what's going on. But I remember the cause, like, and the, you know, like those voices, and it takes me back to that moment.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
It's funny because I had my last son was also born in that year. And I remember going like, so like if I take 2 years back, you know, I'm a Bears fan and my twins were born in the year they went to the Super Bowl against the Colts.
Oh,
but they lost.
Yeah.
Right? But they lost. And I remember my last son, Tyson, being born, and then the Yankees going to the World Series in 2009 and going, oh, fuck, man. Can you win this one? Can my Bears let me down in 2007?
We need to have more kids to get championships for our teams. Is that what you're saying?
I'll get right on it.
Fuck, I don't even know what I got to do for the Titans to win a Super Bowl. I feel like that one might be the stretch. I don't know that I'm ever going to get to see that one. That's going to be,
one day.
As a sports fan, you get spoiled, man, because I've seen the Devils win a Stanley Cup. I've seen, you know, obviously the Yankees do their thing. I've seen the Nets in NBA Finals multiple times, but I haven't seen them win it. Or maybe once in the NBA Finals. But yeah, I'm like and I've seen the Titans in the Super Bowl, but. Yeah, that's the one that I want.
Win.
I want them to win. Yeah.
Gotta get the win.
Yeah, you gotta get the win, man.
Yo, Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney.
Yo,
this week.
Remember leaning up? I went either Ryan Garcia is epically trolling us, the most epic troll of all time, or he has lost his shit, and it was sort of a mixture of both.
Yeah, I think so.
But he turned in the performance
of his career.
Of his career. And I would argue, I don't think that fight was as close as it was when you're visually watching it. Obviously, Ryan Garcia ends up winning by decision, which no one had other bingo card, man. Like, you thought if Ryan Garcia wins, it's by knockout, or he gets beat in the decision handedly by Devin Haney, who's known as the more technical guy. So my take on it was, when Ryan engaged, it was bad for Haney. Like, he couldn't take a shot. It's like every time Ryan landed anything, and I went, oh, this, like people want the rematch, and I go, you can make adjustments for styles and for technical things, and if that fight goes decision because you're both having a really good technical fight, you can't make adjustments for speed and power.
Right.
I'm sorry. Like I go, that I don't want to see that again, because if Ryan decides to engage, I'm like, you can't beat him. Like, you're not going to take a shot. And I'm like, and if you do, it's going to become is it a boring stick and jab fight then for 12 rounds? Sort of like what Floyd did to Maidana the second time.
I thought it would be.
Me too.
I thought Haney would just jab and stay away from him. And because Haney's fast.
Too fast.
He's fast.
That's the thing. I think Ryan's too fast.
He doesn't have the power to knock Ryan out.
No, right. And I think you can't win that without coming in close to him. You got to take risks.
Right.
And I think even Haney said something afterwards. It was like, well, you hurt. And he was like, no, I was more surprised.
Yeah, that's right. I heard that.
And I think the surprise is cool the first time. I go the rest of the times, I'm like, nah, bro, you were hurt.
Yeah.
Like, you look like you didn't know where you were.
Yeah, the surprise came in round one.
Yep. When he got caught and he didn't fall.
He didn't fall.
Yeah. And you went, Ooh,
you better watch out for that left hook. Dude, can we talk about the fight?
Yeah, because I know you was living.
I don't fucking fire the fuck up.
Text had me done.
So before the fight, for those of you who have not sort of followed closely, there was press conference between the two of them, and Ryan Garcia gets up to the podium and he's like, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was like, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus. And he says it like, I don't know, like 10 times or something, yeah. right? And then the press conference continues, and you can see that he's drawing with probably guys from Devin Haney's camp out in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, man, your mom's in my DMs, and I'll fuck her, and blah, blah. You know, like all this. And I was like,
hold on. You say some
like,
wild shit.
I'm like, hold on, bro. I'm like, hold on. Are you down with Jesus, or are you on the other side? Like, what's going on here?
Was that the one where he said, praise Jesus, and then like 2 seconds later, he goes, I'm going to fuck your mouth. Yeah. Which reminded me of some Mike Tyson shit.
Yeah, bro. And I'm just going like, listen, man, I ain't mad at you if you on the God thing, right? But dude, like I was brought up in that too. And you know, there is a duality of man, but shit, you supposed to suppress the other
separately.
Side. Yeah, for real. At least in public.
At least.
But so anyway, so he's and again, you know, we saw the social media post from him, and it was just
I still think there's a little bit of
just fucking strange. Not to mention he's been waiting for a fucking title fight, so he gets one with Gervonta Davis, he gets knocked out, so now he has another chance for this, and then he comes in overweight.
Yeah,
so I'm going like, okay, all this shit, right, with the press conference stuff. And the social media posts, and I'm like, this guy's a fucking nut.
Yeah,
I hope he gets knocked out, right, dude? I even went as far as to go, I'm not following this guy anymore.
Yep,
on social media, man. Fuck this guy, man. I'm just like,
following him.
Yep,
go Haney.
Like, he's fucking pissing me off. I'm just like, I hope Haney knocks his ass out,
bro. When you sent me that, and you like, I hope Haney, and he said unfollow, I immediately went and placed the bet on Ryan Garcia. I go,
good call.
I go, either he's going to get absolutely starched or this shit's going to be phenomenal. I'm like, it'd be so fun. It's so fun because I believe in his knockout power.
Absolutely.
Right. Like as a boxer, you know, like
I didn't believe in his defense.
No.
And or his chin.
I didn't. But I also didn't believe in Devin Haney's ability to knock him out, which is, I think, is what got me. Like I go, if it was Gervonta Davis, I'd be like, bro, you're about to go night. Because it was Devin Haney, I went, Devin Haney's not hurting you. Yep. You've taken shots from Tank. You know, you've taken shots from big dudes. And yes, while there's questions about Garcia's chin, I go, I don't think Devin Haney is knocking you out cold. Yep. He might drop you. And he might buckle you. He might whatever. Because you're willing to exchange. I'm not afraid. And, dude, there was a shot that Haney landed that live, you're like, fuck.
And it didn't do anything.
And no, but in the moment, I'm like, oh shit. When they slowed it down and they showed Ryan's reaction, I went, oh, Haney's super fucked. Because he goes like, I think it was the one where he banged his gloves together and he went, come on. And I went, normally guys will do that to try to fake the fact that they got fucked up. But I go, yo, you can see Ryan's face when he gets hit. I'm like, yo, he doesn't look
the one like where he got mad.
Well, he got mad. Yeah. And I go, oh, he got pissy, almost like you're an annoyance. And I went, oh, you're fucked because you can't hurt him. So now you got to run from him and stick and move. I go, or you got to take risk.
Dude, here's the other thing for me, man. There was several times during the fight where Ryan Garcia was doing this thing where he was almost giving him his back, right? And Devin Haney, No. Well, he was giving him his back.
No, yeah, he's trying to do the fake shoulder roll, but instead
he turned
all the way over. Yeah,
and Devin Haney had his kidney and he was pounding it. And I go, oh, that's going to wear on him. It never did.
It never did. Dude, I think he's just so much bigger. And then Haney, again, I just don't think Haney hits to a point where you're like,
hard.
It doesn't hit hard, bro. He's a great boxer, man. This is not to take away from Devin Haney.
No, no, no.
It's
absolutely
a phenomenal tactician.
I mean, also, what the fuck? He was 31-0?
Yeah, but I also think Devin Haney should fucking send Ryan Garcia a gift and thank him because this is the biggest payday Devin Haney's ever going to get. And I don't think it's close. And he didn't do shit to earn it. Because he didn't promote the fight the way, right? Because I go, yo, we can call Ryan Garcia a nut. We bought it because he was a nut.
Yep.
We wanted to see it because he was a nut. Devin Haney is a boring press conference. He's a boring fighter. I'm like, Ryan Garcia did. I go, yo, for all the antics, for all the shit, I'm like, we tune in when Kanye's losing his shit online. Yep. And that was what Ryan Garcia did, right? He went Kanye for a fucking month or two online. He went ape shit. And we're like, I either want to see him get knocked out.
Right.
Or I want to see what he's coming to the table with.
Dude, yeah. He made me care for like a whole different reason.
He made me care
because I don't fucking mad at him.
You don't fucking mad at him. And you wanted to see him get knocked out. Yep. And it still made you buy the fight.
Yep.
You know, like.
And bro, so here's.
So Devin Haney owes him money.
Here's my lesson from that. So. I unfollowed him on social media and I came to the conclusion to just go like, just leave it. Like I can't get emotionally invested in an athlete. It's like, do what, like, I'm going to enjoy you for what you do. Ryan Garcia, you are a boxer and I enjoy watching you box. And when you fight, I'm going to fucking get it. I'm going to watch it somewhere or I'm going to buy it or whatever, but I'm not interested in the antics.
Yeah.
The same for, you know, back in the day, fucking Charles Barkley used to be like, I'm not a role model, right? None of these athletes are fucking role models.
They're entertainment.
They're entertainment.
And he entertained the fuck out of us.
Yeah, and he sure did, man.
Man, he did. Because I go, you're not buying that fight for just Devin Haney. And dude, I will go as far to say that Ryan Garcia might be the biggest draw in boxing today. I think bigger than Canelo. I think Jake Paul might be the only other one that we could argue. But I go, dude, Terrence Crawford is going to fight some guy in a weight class up to get this next belt.
Is he fighting?
Yeah, supposedly. I don't know who the guy is. I'm not buying the pay-per-view.
I don't know who Canelo's fighting either, but the guy's
fighting Munguia. Right? Yeah, he's fighting a good guy. Okay. I'm not buying the pay-per-view to watch Canelo fight that guy. I'm like, I just don't know who that guy is. So I go, yo, if we happen to be sitting around, I'm like, ah, fuck it. Cause like this is coming from me. I'm a boxing fan. Like I love, like, boxing's in my, you know, top three or four of sports that I love to watch.
Absolutely.
I love boxing. I love everything about it. I've grown up watching it. And to me, I still need the drama. I need the soap opera. I need the everything. I need you to make me care. Like, I could watch ESPN Friday Night Fights and love and not know the people and love just the strategy and the sport of boxing and the spirit of it. But who is making me spend $80 to watch you on a Saturday night? And I'm like, there's no one in boxing right now, bro.
Jake Paul and Ryan Garcia.
Jake Paul and Ryan Garcia.
I would say Tank.
No, but I think it's Tank and who? If Tank is fighting some Joe Schmo, I don't think we care. I think Ryan Garcia could fight a nobody. And if he's acting wild like that, you're like, I gotta fucking watch. Like, you're like, because I want to see if he gets dropped. Like, he mentioned something.
Or I want to see the other guy gets a fucking left hook.
I want to see, dude. And the left doesn't look hard, which is shocking because it's a lead left. And if you're not a boxing.
Well, he's a right hand boxer.
Yes. And that's what I'm telling you. And like, if you're not a boxing fan, you don't understand how impressive it is if you're a right handed boxer, you're leading with your left hand, which means you jab with your left, which is not your power, and your power hand is your right. Ryan Garcia jabs you with his left, and then he short hooks you with that same left and knocks you the fuck out with it. And that is so rare. And, you know, dudes will go, well, just take that away from him, which is what Devin Haney was.
Okay.
But he's so fucking fast that he finds a way to land it. And it was almost, I think him not throwing punches was almost like his, a lot of times I felt like, oh, you're just looking for the one punch. You're not trying to engage.
I thought he got winded a lot. I thought
that could be too. He drank the whole camp.
Oh shit!
So he came in. He goes like, yo. I was acting a fool on purpose. What was true was he goes, yeah, I was drinking. Like sometimes I was drunk and them things. And he goes like, I did drink. I drank all of camp. I drank whatever. He goes like, yo, but I drank all of camp and I win. Who you guys think is one of the best boxers in the world, pound for pound top 10, which is true. Devin Haney was ranked pound for pound top 10. Ryan Garcia is not in the pound for pound top 10. So it's like, and he goes like, and I fucking smoked the pound for pound top 10. So it's like, whatever. Like, he's like, I'm not saying that you should go drink. I'm just saying I did. He's like, I'm not proud of it, but I was drinking the whole fucking time. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think to me, I've never been impressed by Devin Haney. In terms of, like, I can respect his skill set as a boxer. I've never looked at Devin Haney as like the, when I'm looking at who I want to watch fight.
He's not knocking anybody out.
No, man. And when I'm looking at like the echelon of boxing, where it's like, to me, it's Terrence Crawford, it's Errol Spence, right? Obviously Canelo. When you're looking at that group of guys, I was never like, oh, Devin Haney. Like, he was boring. I just didn't care for him. Like, disproved it. And go, because I don't think, if Ryan Garcia gets in and does that against Terrence Crawford, he's getting starched.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he does that against, obviously, Javante. He's getting started. But also, I go, yo, if he goes against Javante at this size, Is it the same fight? Like, maybe it goes 12 and he still loses in a decision.
Well, he came in at what, 160, you said?
Dude, he said 160 fight day, which the fight's at 140. So it means you came in 20 pounds.
Well, for him, it was 17.
Which he wasn't allowed to do against Gervonta Davis. He had to stay skinny. He wasn't allowed to rehydrate. Remember?
Oh, that
was
no, I didn't know that.
So that was his whole thing with Gervonta Davis. He goes, dude, they kept me weak. I had a no rehydration clause, which no one agrees to, and I did because I wanted the fight. And he did. And so, and for those who don't know that, like boxers, they might weigh in at 140 and fight day, they come in at 155, 160 because they just water weight themselves back to normal.
Yep.
And they lose all this weight. It's kind of like a bodybuilder, whatever, cutting to make a show.
So there was no rehydration
clause?
There was
a no rehydration clause only for Ryan Garcia against the fight with Gervonta Davis. Only for Ryan.
So not for the Gervonta?
No. It was a no rehydration clause for Ryan Garcia. And he agreed to it and he took it because Gervonta is a small guy. He was probably, you know, whatever, easy to make the 140 or whatever it was, 130. I think it was 130 something, actually. And then
it is,
you know,
in the 130s.
Yeah, and then he ends up at like 145, maybe 150 on fight day for Gervonta Davis. Ryan had to stay like within a certain amount of that fight day weight, which is why when you look at pictures of Ryan in that fight, you're like, oh, he does look hungry. You know what I mean? Like, he looks small. And I'm not, and I think Tank is more skilled than Haney, and he has more power, obviously. So I don't think it changes the direction of the fight. I think what it does is it makes that fight maybe a late round knockout or a decision for Davis.
Well, fuck,
still.
You never know, man.
Or because I go, yo, because Garcia's going, yo, I hurt him, and he's like, I was weak. Like, I was weak that day. Like, I couldn't do it. He's like, and so I hear him now calling out Davis, where he goes like, let's do it. Let's do it at the 140. No rehydration clause. Like, let's see what, and I'm like, fuck, I'd pay to watch it again, bro.
Yeah,
and like, I would, bro. Like, he has to be the biggest draw boxer today. Dude, because Canelo, unless Canelo fights, which, dude, if Canelo fought Terrence Crawford, that would be a mega fight.
Yeah,
monster. But other than that, there isn't anyone else that I think Canelo, as amazing as he is, and he's carried boxing for the last few years, there isn't anyone else, I think, other than Ryan Garcia, and strictly through, yes, he's
social
a
media,
YouTuber,
bro.
He's a social media thing, I go, and then he found a way to get you to hate him or love him, and that is, dude, that was Floyd Mayweather's playbook for years, man. It's like, you're gonna hate me or love me, but you're gonna pay to watch me either
way. Which I didn't know, by the way, Floyd told him, yo, come in 3 pounds over.
Dude, and not for nothing, Floyd would know, yes, that's an advantage boxing-wise, but also I think Floyd also sees the business aspect of that, of like, yo, fuck the belt, win the fight, knock him out, be the bad guy. You know, like you were pissed because you're like, yo, he's not...
He's a fucking nut.
He's a fucking nut, but he goes, the spirit of the thing, like I watched to see a title fight, and I was kind of mad because I'm like, yo, if I bought tickets to that fight,
yeah, I wanted
pay-per-view, I want to see a title fight. But then I stopped and thought about it and I went, actually, do I care about the belt? This is how little we care about the belts in boxing. I go, I actually don't care that it isn't a title fight.
I thought because he lost to Davis, and I know that he was sort of chasing this legitimacy in boxing, I thought he would put more effort into getting down to 140 to fight for the belt.
But it doesn't change whether or not you want to see the fight. And then it
not
doesn't,
anymore. It
and
doesn't.
It doesn't diminish the result. Because you go,
no, it doesn't.
I go, yo, in boxing, we care so little about belts because of the way it's set up. And we won't get into that too much. Like, boxing just set up like trash. But because of that, I go, we just care that, oh, you beat so-and-so. That's all we see. We don't go, you were, dude, how many champions are in boxing that you've never fucking heard of? Like the guy that Terrence Crawford is moving up to quote unquote fight. I've never heard of him. He has one of the belts. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that guy. I don't care about that guy.
This is boxing has 154?
Yeah. Whatever the next weight class is, because he said he's willing to come up two or three weight classes to fight Canelo. Terrence Crawford is like, that's my dream fight. And I'm like, yo, that would actually be awesome.
But you got to do it soon.
But you have to do it soon, and that. But also, man, if you're Terrence Crawford, you go, okay, you could outbox Canelo. Is that a really boring fight, or does Canelo bring that to you and make you fucking like does he make you brawl?
I mean, Canelo's not gonna back down.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, like, Canelo makes you brawl because he's gonna go, nah, come get. And because, bro, Canelo put his chin out for fucking Triple G.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I go, Canelo's not, you're not knocking him out if you're Terrence Crawford. I'm sorry. Like you're not knocking him out because he's been hit by a fucking guy who weighs 190 probably.
Yeah, bro, that's right.
So you go,
and the other dude, the one that actually beat him.
Yes.
The upper.
Couldn't knock him out.
Couldn't knock him out.
He can outbox him, which I go, yo, Terrence Crawford can outbox Canelo, but you can't knock him out. So you go, if you're.
Let's see. and see if you can take his and hits.
That's the part I have is like, yo, can anybody land a punch on Crawford that's meaningful? And then can Crawford take it? Because you haven't seen Crawford get hit. You know, like you haven't seen, you know, Errol Spence didn't look like Errol Spence. And a lot of that is credit to Crawford, but like he didn't get hit the way you go, oh, can you take a shot? Like, how's your chin?
Dude, the fight that I remember, or that's memorable for me with Terrence Crawford was the one where he fought Benavidez, the brother.
Mm, yeah.
Like that was a good fight, but he ended up knocking him out.
Yeah. Dude, the one that I always think of is Amir Khan. And I know Amir Khan was way past his. He was. He knocked him out so brutally.
Yeah, that was bad.
But also Amir Khan can hit. Like, he's fast and yeah. And I know Amir Khan was a little past his prime, but Amir Khan couldn't hurt him. And it was like, wow, man, this kid. Yeah, that was the one for me that I went. I think it was the first name that he had really fought, too, that it was like, oh, he's past his prime.
So that's when you took him seriously.
I took him serious after that. Yeah, yeah. And then when he dropped him in, like, that devastating fashion where I went, wow, man, you just took a guy who has been a multi-division world champ and fun to watch and fast. Because Amir Khan was the real deal. His chin has always been questionable.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that. But it was like, can you take a shot from Amir Khan? And the speed of Amir Khan was always something that was respected. Yep. And he made Amir Khan look like he was in slow motion. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, this guy's a real deal.
Yeah. Let's see what happens, man.
We'll see, man.
Dude, what's up with all these rap beefs?
Rap is awesome.
What
right
is
now,
going
man?
On?
Or actually, let me take that back. Beefs. Rap is trying to get to a place of being awesome right now because rap has been trashed. And I know I sound like the old head saying that, but it. And I'm not saying
don't
that
ask
about
my, if you artists. If you ask my son, he'd be like, Boss Man D-Lo.
Yeah, see, I don't know who the fuck that is, bro. But also,
I only know because
dude, I said it to say like, bro, if you think Bossman D-Lo, like fucking G Herbo and whoever else is big now, like all these guys, like NBA YoungBoy, like these guys aren't mainstream. They're not big, right? Like the guy still right now is Drake. Like hands down, Drake is.
What do you think of Drake, Kendrick, J. Cole?
Sure, but I'm saying. Drake is the, like, if you're ranking these guys like athletes, Drake is LeBron, and Kendrick and J. Cole are fucking,
KD,
you know, KD and Devin Booker or Steph. You know what I mean? Right. Like they're still, Drake is the guy for this generation. Like, hate or love it, like, lyrically, okay, he may not be J. Cole to that level lyrically, but I think total package, you go,
dude,
some housewife in the Midwest knows who Drake is. She does not know who J. Cole is.
Agreed. And that dude, and he's been hot almost my kid's whole life.
Dude, 15 years.
Yes.
His mixtape came out in 2008, 2009.
Nine, yeah, around there.
And
yep.
The mixtape blew him up. And we've been singing every fucking song he's dropped ever since, bro. Like, you go, he's a pop star, I think. I mean, he's huge, bro. But he can rap his ass off. Like, I'm like, whether you like it or not, he can rap his ass off.
Yes.
And
but he is a, I guess you could classify him as a pop star.
Dude, he has to be the biggest rap superstar, I would say, of all time. Rap superstar of all time. Like Lil Wayne might have that level of fame, like right where he was big. Drake is the only person that I would go, you could go to people's grandmothers and they would probably know who Drake is.
The thing is about like sort of, you know, hip hop. Hip hop is like street urban music.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's like,
yeah. So we're holding the Jewish Canadian thing against them.
Yeah. We are.
No, that's fair.
I'm just saying.
No, it's fair.
Right. So like, I think it's just based on how you classify that. But yes, I guess in the genre of music, fuck man, it's rap.
It's considered urban.
And
hood culture. But I would also argue that's also what makes his run more impressive is that you're letting the kid without the street credibility.
Right.
Sort of like, bro, whether we like it or not, he fucking murked Meek Mill in their battle when they had it. And Meek Mill's a street dude, right? Meek Mill is,
from Philly.
He's whatever. He sold drugs and murdered people or whatever the fuck. I don't know. Meek's story is, right?
Allegedly.
He rides four-wheelers illegally and gets arrested. That's how hard Meek Mill is, right? He gets arrested on a four-wheeler. So, but Drake destroyed him in their little rap beef.
Yep.
And then now you have, and I think the reason people go at Drake is because he's at the top, right? Like, there's no fun in going at sort of the middle level guys. Like, if you're J. Cole, if you're Kendrick, listen,
that's Kendrick, how 50 got popular.
Yes, bro, 50 was going, which Bro, I'm so glad you mentioned that shit because 50 got popular just taking fucking jabs at everybody
at the
with
time.
DJ Woo Kid, and Drake's diss track starts with DJ Woo Kid, fucking the sample shit from the DJ Woo Kid track.
Oh,
and I'm like,
is that right?
Oh my God, bro. Because it took me back to 50 rocking people, and I'm like, that's only something that hip hop heads would pick up on.
Yeah.
Where DJ Woo Kid shit comes on and you're like, oh, that's when you knew 50's about to murder somebody. And then I'm like, when Drake did that, I went, oh, that's such a hip hop, very nuanced, very like, if you're not a fan, if you're just listening to the Drake fucking top 40 songs, yeah, and you're not a true hip hop fan, like, you know, you didn't really get into the backpack rappers or whatever, like, you missed that reference. But him starting with the Woo Kid thing, I went, fuck. Like, I didn't even need to listen to the rest of the song. I was like, oh, this
he did it again.
Slap. He did it again. Yeah. And so, and bro.
So hold on. So I did not hear this.
So many good ones, man.
Did he come out with something recent?
Yeah. He did the Kendrick Lamar disc.
The Kendrick Lamar. Okay, so yeah, he did.
He did.
Oh,
and Kendrick
fuck,
had yet to respond, which, bro, Kendrick is nice. J. Cole is nice. This is not taking anything. I don't think they're Drake in terms of. We're gonna take lyrics out of it for a second. Like, I think any of them could hold, you know, their own. Wait, Drake, as far as like
with any
I'm talking
artists,
career,
yeah,
pop culture, right, total package, as far as like the all encompassing. It's my argument for Jay all the time, right? It's like, yes, are there better rappers bar for bar than Jay-Z? Sure. Has there been rappers more successful for that prolonged of a period of time, you know, and have the total package of the pop culture? No. Drake is the next closest thing now. Yeah. And Drake might be number one. Like, we might be arguing 5 years from now that Drake is the greatest rapper of all time in terms of, like, just, again, overall packaging for grading every single thing. Like,
right,
you know, number one hits, you know, whatever, yada, yada. Not just lyrical. You know.
I guess that's probably fair, right? Because you go, you can be a pop star and rap.
Correct.
But are you true hip hop? Right, that's another argument,
and that's the other argument that people will make, that Drake's not hip hop because he's not hood, because he's not urban, because he's not this stuff. And that's, I'm not here to argue that part.
No.
The Drake thing is like, and I understand that that's how hip hop feels. But again, the hardest bars, the one thing come out, like Drake delivers time after time,
yeah,
even in these
man.
Beef, like he fucking ripped at Kendrick and he went at him first. You know, or he responded to the subliminals and outright called them, and we're still waiting for Kendrick to drop. And then J. Cole does that bitch ass thing where he backs out of the beef now.
Well, the thing is, I mean, the shit that he said, the shit that J. Cole said wasn't even right. Saying like that he fell off like The Simpsons, and it's like, no,
I think
like,
that's,
no, he didn't.
No, he didn't. And The Simpsons is the longest running TV show in the history of mankind. It's been on for like 35 years.
Right.
I love
it's
Simpsons.
Just a bad it's a bad comparison.
It's a horrible comparison. I think. And I, man, then there's two sides of me. The hip hop fan hates what J. Cole did, right? The hip hop fan, the you know,
you mean
growing
the apologizing.
Up. Yes, the apologizing part. I hate it. The hip hop fan in me.
Yes.
The man in me understands where he's coming from.
Yeah, I do too.
He goes, hey, man, like, it wasn't in my spirit. Like, I didn't feel that way. I'm basically making that shit up. I actually really like Kendrick, so I'm just doing it. And so I understand that part where he goes, like, yeah, I couldn't sleep. It's not in my spirit. I can't. Like, I'm like, yo, the man in me can relate to that.
Yeah.
But the hip hop fan in me is going,
fuck that.
Fuck that,
fuck
bro.
That.
This is sport. Yeah. Like it's a
right.
sport. Like, go for his neck. Like, do
and,
this for the lyrical exercise. Like,
but, and not for nothing, man. If, like, this is not the 90s, right? Like, this is not when dudes was really living that life. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right, like, you mean
J. Cole ain't out there slinging drugs and shit like that. And neither
you mean
is,
where you actually have to
is,
worry about your safety? Yeah.
Yes.
No.
And so, to me, when J. Cole dropped it, I was like, whether it was good or not, or true or not, fuck it, man. Just stand by your shit and move the fuck on, bro.
I wonder if it was weak, and that's why he backed off it. Because it wasn't great.
Not
for J. Cole standards. It wasn't a good diss track. And so I wonder if even he is like, oh, man, that's weak.
That sucked,
but also, I'm going to give him a pass here. If he's saying he didn't believe anything he was saying, he wasn't into that, this mess with his spirit, and it wasn't just who he is, he actually likes Kendrick and he didn't want to beef, I go, yeah, that's why I was weak. You have to feel it.
Right.
Where the Rick Ross shit towards Drake, you can go, Ross means that shit and Ross is having fun. And then Drake shit, and I go, oh, there's real animosity there. It's very difficult if you're J. Cole, you don't have any real animosity, you're doing this for sport, to come up with anything like meaningful that's actually going to slap. The the Drake shit and Rick Ross shit, like what you're hearing, where you're like, Rick Ross is just having fucking fun. Like, you can just tell Rick Ross has been dying to do this. I'm like, ultimately, you're not going to win that, bro. I just don't think so. And then if you're Kendrick, I'm like, yo, Kendrick lyrically could win this, but it's taken him so long to respond now. I think we're on week two since Drake dropped his diss track. And then Drake drops another one with...
He went back to back on
him? He calls it Taylor Made. Well, he didn't go back to back on Kendrick. He drops it and talks about other people. But, it, you know, but when he did back to back, it was like, I waited 4 days. Yo, where y'all at? And he's just fucking going in. And I think Charlamagne had the best bar where he goes, yo, if Drake drops another one at Kendrick and goes, I waited 4 days, K-Dot, where you at? Like, I'm like, yo, he would fucking just destroy. Like, yeah. People would just... But anyway, like... Then he goes and he calls Taylor Swift the hardest person in the game right now, because Taylor Swift might have dropped the hardest diss tracks last week too. Yo, Taylor went ape. I was like, yo.
I have not heard the album. Oh, so my God, bro.
Taylor went hard at like Kim Kardashian and like a couple of other, you know, obviously she's always talking about ex-lovers. Like, yeah, I'm like, hey, yo, you have 30 something ex-lovers that you can write songs about. At some point, you got to look at the mirror.
At some point, you a hoe.
Yeah. Listen, I don't even knock, like, girl, do you. But I go, maybe the song should be called I'm the Problem. I don't know. but her shit at Kim K was hard. Like, some of the, I got to find the lyric. But there was, like, a lyric and a song in there where it's clearly directed towards Kim Kardashian, yeah. Because the title of the song capitalizes K-I-M in that order, and everything else
okay,
is lowercase.
Okay, that's dope.
But she says something in there like, you know, like, I don't want to use your name, or I change your name in a song, but one day your kids are going to be bopping and only you and I are going to know, like, what it's like, sort of like, but right. It's like, yo, your kids are going to be bopping this because I'm fucking nice like that,
right?
And it's going to be about you and they're not even going to know it, kind of thing. And I'm like, that's kind of hard. Like, how y'all letting, again, the little country singing girl drop harder songs than J. Cole?
And dude, I wonder if that was, because, you know, Beyonce.
Yeah.
She has the country album.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I wonder if Taylor was just like, what the fuck, man? Like, I need to go do...
I'll go do a little dabble in this.
Let me go dabble in, you know, I need to drop
30-something tracks or whatever. Drop. Like, Jesus, Taylor.
I've been waiting for this shit.
I know. I'm like, Travis, you've been in a season too fucking long. Keep your girl busy. She got too much free time on her hand. But, you know, typical.
I got 30 tracks I've been waiting to drop on your ass.
From what I haven't heard the album, but like all of it. I've heard snippets and little songs here and there. And I've heard a lot of the ones where that were controversial or were like the quote unquote diss tracks or whatever. You know, in true Taylor fashion, there's a lot of stuff about her love life and whatever else. But the shit that she's like, I'm like, yo. She just keeps proving time and time again why she's such a great songwriter and such a, like, she just taps into things that, yeah, like, man, I think people can relate to, you know, love her or hate her. I go, she knows what sort of buttons to push, and she's a great songwriter, a great performer, a great musician overall, yeah. Man. And
back to your point of, you know, 5 years from now, are we talking about Drake is the best ever? Like, maybe 5-10 years from now, are we talking about Taylor in like the Michael Jackson Absolutely. Conversation?
I think we should be having that conversation now. I think Taylor Swift is the Michael Jackson of this generation. Dude, in a lot of ways, you know, it's funny. This reminded me of not rap beef, but Michael Jackson and Prince had like this rivalry, right? Like, they both came up at the same time. The thing, Prince, more musically gifted.
Right,
music savant, like could play the multiple instruments, yep. Kind of stuff, insanely talented.
But Michael
Jackson had the hits.
Bad boy.
He had the but he had the hits, right? Yep. He had the commercial success. He had the actual commercials, the dancing, the thing, all that. And it was like, that doesn't diminish Prince's skill set. But if you're talking about who the bigger artist was, it's Michael Jackson. Yeah, and that's not insulting to Prince.
No.
He was phenomenal. It was just that Michael Jackson was like
next
echelon
level.
Of yeah. Just, that doesn't exist. Taylor Swift is that now, and I don't think it's fucking close, bro. I think Taylor Swift is that for this generation, and I don't think it's even close. I think Beyonce might be the next closest thing we have to the Taylor Swift right now, but I don't even know that Beyonce has that kind of... pool right now where people are fucking crying when she's dropping an album and doing that. Like, you know, she obviously has her fans, she has her thing. Beyonce's, you know, funny, fantastic.
Man, is like, I talk to people like in my generation, and a lot of them, it's just like Taylor Swift. I don't even know any of her songs. Ugh. And it's like, no, yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Start playing songs.
Yeah, you start playing songs, and you go like, oh, yeah, I've heard that. It's just like, yeah, you've heard a lot of this shit. You're not a fan. But you know, it's kind of out of your generation, I guess. But her popularity cannot be ignored, and her star power cannot be ignored. We talked about this before on the show. She's changing economies in places where she's doing tours.
There's crazy. Nothing like it, man. It's just she is on a different planet. And like you said, it's funny when people are like, I don't know your songs. I'm like,
yeah, you do.
When you start going through, Taylor Swift has 20 songs where you're going to be like, oh shit, I didn't realize that was her.
Right.
Yeah, it's insane. And the fact that she writes a lot of them and all that, I'm like, we can hate all we want, you know, for whatever reasons on her. Like, you cannot dispute the absolute, like, just influence and the talent. Like, you just can't. It's like you can, and I'm like, yo, maybe part of this is Taylor's finally dating someone with a little bit of a flavor, and Travis Kelce. Maybe that's why she's dipping into the diss tracks and all that shit. Where like before she would, you know, her dating, not for nothing, Taylor needed a fuckboy. She's been dating like all these like weird, like, you know, goody two shoe kind of guys or whatever. Like, maybe Taylor needed a fuckboy in there to get her out of her shell. And then drop, and now she's like, you, like, when you didn't think she could get better, like, she's gonna drop better music, borderline hip hop, and when she's dropping harder diss tracks than fucking J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar right now, you're like, there's something wrong.
So I see Quavo's in but what's
and
his,
Chris Brown
is,
man,
that was that people. Is that the fucking that, beef is it
that Chris
too?
Brown's song was hard. Fucking hard.
Of course, dude. Chris Brown is like a closet rapper,
dude. And Chris Brown, another one. I know we give him shit because, you know, he beat the shit out of Rihanna, and that's like all we think about when we think of Chris Brown. He's fucking talented from a music perspective. God, he can sing, absolutely, he can dance,
bro.
He can rap.
An entertainer,
He can write songs. Absolutely. He's an entertainer through and through, and you hate what, you know, that whole situation with him and Rihanna, and obviously that has sort of held him back from reaching this superstardom level that he probably should have based on talent.
Right.
But the song with Quavo.
But what is the deal with them?
They have a beef. Which is weird. They have a beef because I think it's they were fucking the same chick, or they have, and you know, there's like pillow talk with. And honestly, I don't get this because I think all these guys all bang the same chicks. Like, there's only so many girls that all these like rappers and R&B artists sort of like all share or have had at some point in time. And I think what's happened is like through the pillow talk that they each kind of find out, like, this is what Drake and the Ross thing is too, man. It's linked to like Drake has slept with some chicks that maybe Ross has slept with, and then she talks to the, you know, and like, you know, he might say a little too much than he should, or maybe he's trying to look cool to this girl or whatever. And so these girls talk, and it's sort of all the whole beef is that. And the Chris Brown and Quavo thing have to do with, I can't think of the name of the girl, but I think it's somebody else who's famous, but something to do with that. And there's like some pillow talk behind that. And now there's
I gotta catch up, man. I have not heard you got either one. So did Quavo respond?
So Quavo, yes, he did.
He did.
It was fine. And actually,
no. Like with a song.
Yeah.
Oh, he did.
It was fine.
Okay,
yeah, it was good. But it was good. And then he included Takeoff, who's dead, because I would say Chris Brown mentioned, he goes like, yo, we wish that was you, basically, like, to talking about Takeoff's death, which is a little wild, it's a little far to go. And I get it, because, you know, that's Quavo's nephew, and you watch your nephew die in front of you,
right,
and then, you know, some guy makes a song or whatever, but it was...
It's kind of in the spirit of hip-hop, bro.
Yep. It's funny, man, because I think of, like, Ether, obviously, like, being the Jay-Z sort of stan, like... When Ether came out, I still stand by the fact that Takeover was a better diss track. Ether was a better song. Because out of the gate with the beat, and then you start with fuck Jay-Z, you go, I can't even compete with that. It's over. And I remember being livid when I heard it. I remember when that beat dropped to Ether, and it was like, fuck Jay-Z. And I'm like, God damn it.
He got him.
And it was like, yo, lyrically, if you just read the lyrics side by side, Takeover is better, but Ether as a song and as a production and, you know, everything else, it's like, that shit's so hard.
It's so good.
Ether became a verb. Like, that's how good the track was. It's like, when we started referring to rap beefs or people getting murked, we're like, yo,
they about got
to Ether him.
Yep.
Yeah, it became a verb. That's how good it was. But you go, man, when you listen to the substance of each song, Jay-Z's diss track was actually a better diss track. Ether was just a better overall song.
I have to
song.
Go back and read the lyrics.
Dude, go back to Takeover and just listen to Takeover. Listen to what he says and you're like, it's way harder. Like Ether, you're like, oh, he's talking about Hawaiian shirts and then he calls Jay-Z a fag and you're like, oh, okay. Like there's nothing there. Where Jay-Z shit is like the double entendres and the thing. You know, like lyrically, yeah. It's a better song. But the Ether is so hard that you're just
that's
like
so good, bro.
Oh my god,
it's
bro.
The only one that I remember,
dude. From the first, like from the first six beats of it, you're just like, fuck. Like you don't even need to listen to the rest of it. The beat is so hard, and it's so good, and that it became a verb. And I'm like, dude, who's gonna drop the next Ether? Like, is it gonna be Kendrick? Because I go, I think Kendrick's out of time. Kendrick has taken so long to respond now.
But and Kendrick is like that, right? Like Kendrick is not the guy that just puts out multiple tracks all the time. Like that dude puts actual thought into his stuff and he drops, you know, an album once every 2 years or whatever. Like that's that guy.
True, but I think Kendrick has been dropping subliminals against Drake for so long that you gotta have a song in your back pocket, or at least the lyrics in your back pocket, right? Because Kendrick has been the one asking for this for years. Like Kendrick has been the one in a lot of songs dropping these subliminal sort of jabs at Drake. He's just never called them out, you know, specifically as that Drake. But you can tell, like, they're just jabs at Drake. And so now when it's sort of like out in the open and Drake just like, fuck it, I'm just going to call you out. I'm sick of taking these like little, you know, like a passive aggressive sort of jabs. I'm like, I think there's a time limit to if you take a month to respond, I'm disinterested because I'm going, it took you a month to write a song.
Right.
And as much as people, you know, we want to diss Drake about the ghostwriting or whatever, you know, like maybe.
The guy responds quick.
But he responds quick and he comes with it. And you know, like there's still, you know, like I thought the Rick Ross shit he did was corny. But, you know, like the whole text messages with his mom and the screenshot, it was whack. But the song, bro, the tailor-made freestyle, awesome.
It's good.
And then the other song, it's like you can't hit on that. I'm like, I still haven't seen anybody else put out anything better. Dude, and I want to see Kendrick so bad because Kendrick is so nice.
He is.
That I'm like, oh, he's going to drop fire.
You figured he could, could even freestyle.
But he should drop fire. Yeah, yeah.
But, dude, I had a theory on this thing, man. And I go, are the record sales for hip-hop, like, are they dropping? Like, because there seems to be so many beefs at the same time. And I was like, is this shit planned?
Just
is this
to
something
up?
To boost? Yeah.
Oh, bro,
boost.
Rick Ross and Drake go on tour suddenly together. You
that's
know, because,
saying,
because they're
man.
Boys, like, right? Like they made a lot
for
of
a
songs
long time,
together.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aston Martin Music, right? Has Drake and yeah. Dude, that's not a bad point, man. Like you go, yo, how do we drum up in that same like spirit of the boxing thing? How do you drum up interest and stuff into this? Like
I didn't think about the boxing thing, but no, that's
rap has
right.
been very boring. Lately, rap has been
right,
very
like everybody's nice. It's dude. It's very much like the culture shift. You even see it in sports where like you know like the Knicks and the Bulls when they played each other back in the 90s. Man, like they hated each other, or at least it seemed that way.
Yeah.
And then now you get these guys, you know, the top guys in the league. They play, and then everybody's hugs after the game, right?
Like I hate that shit,
dude. Like the fucking Detroit Pistons. You know when they finally got dethroned by the Bulls, they just walked off the court.
Now,
there was
I want
no,
you to fucking hate each other, bro.
Right, and it's just. There was this, you know, this sort of like this really like
animosity,
rivalry,
like real, yeah.
Right? But and hip hop was that way, this sort of machismo, and obviously some guys took it too far in the early days, but now it's just like everybody gets along, which is probably good at some level, but in the true spirit of hip hop, like I like to see the rivalry.
Because hip hop is built on the braggadocious, on the
yeah, like
not
I'm,
necessarily
I'm
this
better
same,
than
but
you.
I'm better than you.
Yep.
And there's a reason why we have ciphers and you have rap battles and you have a stuff. The whole idea it's competitive, right? Sport.
It's sport. There
and,
you go.
And that's what it is, and it's sort of nature. It's like it's poetry. And there's like I always think of hip hop and it's broken out into like I almost think of it as like martial arts, right? Where there's different sort of like disciplines, if you will.
Yeah.
And like right, there's battle rap and then there's hip hop, there's songs you want to make for the club, there's you know, like and part of it is the sport of I'm better than you. Let's go prove it, let's go head to head. And I think that's what this generation was missing. Because bro, the biggest, the most influential rapper of this current generation now, and I'm not talking about, like, because we said Drake dropped 15 years ago. Future might be the most influential rapper in this current generation, right? Like, when you think about all the Migos and NBA YoungBoy and Lil Uzi Vert and all these guys, you go, like, that's probably very heavy Future. Like, but no one's going back to a Future song 20 years from now and playing it at a wedding, or, you know, going, he was one of the hardest rappers of all time, or he did, because he doesn't have that.
And he just dropped a new album.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And Future is awesome. You play him at the club. It's great. You know, like, there's a time and place for a Future song. But, dude, there's a guy I love who I can't believe doesn't get mentioned in a lot of these conversations, and maybe he doesn't have the commercial success that Drake and J. Cole and even Kendrick have, and maybe that's why, but to me, of the current guys right now, like, and I have to remove Drake and these guys from that because they've been around for a little bit, Joyner Lucas, to me, is so slept on.
He's phenomenal.
He is... So he might be my favorite rapper of the last.
He doesn't have the commercial success.
No, but he probably should. So good, man. Joyner Lucas is so, like, he could. I've heard songs of his.
He tells stories. Yes. And, like, I think, you know what? I think that he's a really good mix of, like, kind of like this new flavor, but he has, like, comes on kind of the old school stuff where he can bring. But you can bring that storytelling to the game where it's not just like one line that is totally mutually exclusive to the next line, to the next line, to the next line. This dude can kind of bring in an entire story to his stuff, and then the delivery is amazing.
And it's what hip hop was built on, right? It's like the storytelling. It's the putting you in a place and time. It's the feeling like it's relatable. It's the, like, you know, like, when I think of where I grew up and what got me into hip hop, it was like, yeah, there's some shit that gets you hyped and gets you thing, but it was coming from people who grew up in neighborhoods similar to yours. It was people who had circumstances similar to yours. Yep. It was people, you know, it was poetry about things that you were going through day to day, and it was storytelling, you know, like Nas, Illmatic put you in a place where you're like, oh, I can see that. I know people who go through that, even if right. It wasn't me. Like, you know, like DMX, man, when DMX first came out, there was some hype shit, there was some awesome stuff where you're like, yeah, I can think about being with my friends and hanging out and doing this. But then there were parts of it that were like so just deep and emotional and all that stuff. And I think Joyner, man, to me is like Joyner. I've seen him drop a thing where you're like, oh, that's a club banger.
Yep.
And I've seen Joyner tell stories that will like literally push you to tears. Like there's a new song that he just dropped with Jelly Roll.
Okay.
Who I love Jelly Roll. I think it's called Best for Me. And I don't even want to give it away. You have to go listen to the song. And Joyner does this a lot, where he does a song from two different perspectives of two different individuals. And Best for Me is a song where he does the perspective of someone who is dealing with someone who has an addiction, and then the person who is addicted.
Ooh.
And he raps it from both perspectives.
That's dope.
And it's so fucking beautiful, and it's so well written, and it's so well performed, and Jelly Roll, you know, like, kills the chorus and all that stuff. But it reminds me, like, Joyner has the song I'm Not Racist, where he does it from the perspective of a black person and a white person.
Yeah.
And you go, yo, both like, it's a perspective that is absolutely based on reality. Yep. That it's a difficult conversation that we don't want to have.
Yeah, and neither one of them are wrong.
Yep. But they're uncomfortable truths.
Right.
And people don't want, and there's things that people don't want to say out loud. And just, it's so well performed by him. Like that, you know, like Devil's Work is so good. Like there's a song of his that I have on my playlist to just get hyped called I Love.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. There's a song called ADHD. Like his whole album is called ADHD, but a song called ADHD that just resonates really well with me. And like he just consistently, like he does these songs with Logic, you know, with his ISIS and Homicide with M and all these, like,
He did the one too, but it was like a bum that kind of like finds money or some
but
he takes you to like the whole story. Yeah, it's so good, man.
Dude, he does so even good. One from the perspective of guys like robbing a bank together, doing a heist, and he does like the perspective of the heist. And bro, he's such a great and it's funny, man. He'll post things all the time where like, yeah, like I'm not as big as I should be because people say I'm corny because this is what I'm talking about. but he's such a good storyteller, and he's such a, you know, like, I think we get caught up in, you know, like, again, future, awesome, time and place, and, you know, like, but there's also an argument to be made that future is talking a lot about doing fucking lean and being drunk all the time and whatever, and maybe that's not cool, where Joyner, and not to say Joyner's clean because he's far from it, but he's also storytelling of these things that are very real, that are very, I think, personal, very, like, uncomfortable, and he just, and I just can never believe, dude, he did a song with Eminem, the Lucky Me. And he's the only person I've ever heard where I go, I'm not sure who had the better verse. And with Eminem, it's usually M has it. Yes. Oh, it's not even close. You go, oh, Eminem is about to murder this shit. And yeah, Joyner, like, goes first.
Like, don't put him on your track.
Oh, dude, Joyner goes first, and then M comes in, and you're like, oh, shit, I got to think about this, because neither one is wrong. Like, neither argument that you could make, right? Like, who's better? They're both just phenomenal. But you go, he held his own with, you know, arguably one of the greatest lyricists of all time.
Yeah.
And he just, and it was cool because M has seen him do ciphers and all that and went, I really like him. And Joyner was like a fan. He's like geeking out. And then they got to do a song together, which I love. That's to cool, see people, man, get in those positions. But it's funny, man. I thought about him and I went, who wants to face him in a rap battle? Because from what I've seen lyrically, that's not the guy. He's so fucking creative. And that I go, oh my God, imagine the shit that he would come up with, like the double, triple, quadruple entendres they'd come up with in lyrics.
But he's not big enough commercially for anybody to come out.
Yeah, if you do not know about Joyner Lucas, do yourself check a him favor out, and go down that rabbit hole. Really, man. He's so good. So, so good. Like, I can't. And also, if you're into Drake, Joyner Lucas is also half white. So if that's your thing, then go.
Yo, how we doing on time, bro?
Dude, we're at an hour and five, man.
Fuck, man.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, I know we got some shit on here. What do you want to get into, man?
Ooh, what's the
you
one?
You want to talk about the guy in New York, or you want to talk about...
Bro. Yeah.
I feel like we got to touch on this.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be too old if we touch on it a week from now. Yeah, yeah.
So you guys have probably seen this. A guy set himself on fire in New York City, just outside of the courthouse where Trump's trial is being held. The guy's name is Max Azzarello.
Probably Latino?
I don't know. Filipino?
What is he?
Azzarello.
Okay.
I don't know. But apparently, like, somebody or several people seen this guy, like, dousing himself with some kind of, you know, flammable liquid. And they were calling out to, like, the police, like, yo, this guy's set himself on fire. And he fucking does it. Right? And whatever he doused himself with, he is in intense...
Oh, bro, he's a fire...
Fucking flames,
He looks like a NASCAR driver. He just got out of a car that was...
So, yo, the
nuts, bro.
The video that I saw, bro, I go, the guy's like freaking out. He's doing that. He's like, somebody, you know, help, help, you know, help, help. Bro, I immediately put myself in that position. And I'm like,
which position? On fire?
Or no, the guy watching fuck it? No, man. Fucking setting myself on fire. Fucking retard.
To be a marshmallow in a s'more.
No, man. Dude, let me tell you something. But I put myself in the position of the guy recording. I'm not calling anybody. Not one person, bro. You want to fucking set yourself on fire, bro? Knock yourself out.
Yeah, bro. You know how fucked up mentally you have to be to set... Bro, if you want to kill yourself and all that stuff, like, there's some painful ways or something. Bro, setting yourself on fire is a wild thing to do. You know how fucking painful that is for a long time, bro?
No, I don't.
You ever burned your finger, bro?
By mistake? While you were,
yeah, that shit hurts, bro. Now, do that to your whole body for minutes.
Yeah, bro.
Minutes. Because it takes a long time to die from that shit. Like, minutes.
Yeah, dude.
And eventually you burn through enough layers where you stop feeling pain. It's fucking brutal. So I go, you have to be so far gone to do that, bro.
Yeah.
So far gone. Like, and he's like the second or third person to do that shit in the last week or two. Then somebody else set themselves on fire. I can't remember who it was, man. But on TV, too, set themselves on fire. I think it was in front of the White House or
something. I'm going to tell you right now, bro. This is how you fucking rid yourself of the fucking tards in society, bro. Like, if you are willing to do that, I am willing to stand by and watch.
Yeah, we should let that. Yeah, like he's not dead, right? They rescued
No,
right?
He's dead.
Oh, he's dead?
Yeah, he died.
Oh, I thought they sprayed him out.
They extinguished him.
They extinguished
him. And then they took him to the fucking hospital and he died.
Yeah, and he died. Yeah, yeah. From fucking, because he turned himself, again, into a s'more. Bro, the best shit about that was the video that I saw was the chick, the news reporter chick, and she was like, oh. And you know how these news reporters, they try not to get emotional. Like they try not to act like you and I. Like if that shit happened in front of you and I, yeah. I'd be like, yo, this motherfucker's on fire. Check this shit out.
Yep.
This is wild, right? She was like, he has completely engulfed himself. And she's just so matter of fact. Like,
yeah.
But you could tell inside she wants to be like, this motherfucker's on fire.
Be like, don't mind me. Get a close-up of that shit.
Yo, she keeps her cool, and it is the most awkward, like, oh, can someone hear? We need to extinguish these flames. And she's just so calmly talking about it. I'm like, bro, stop using big words. Just say, he is on fire. This motherfucker looks, yeah, he's like a log right now. We're not making s'mores. He should not be burning this way. Like, bro. Yeah.
And so one of the first things that I was disturbed about was, they say he's from Florida. So
of course he is.
Well, he does. Well, he lived here at the time, but he was born in New York.
Was he actually a fire marshal here? What did he do?
I had no
imagine
idea.
Imagine he was a firefighter. That ain't shit.
So no, man. So he was, according to his friends and acquaintances, really smart guy. Almost like one of those like guys that are like too smart.
Oh, okay.
And he felt that he was kind of getting into these conspiracy theorists, and he actually held up a sign that said, like, he felt like Trump and Biden were working together to form like a fascist coup.
Okay.
And that was kind of his thing of, I'm going to be outside of the courthouse. There's going to be media there. And I guess I'm going to set myself on fire to bring light so that all of you fucking sheep can see what's actually going on. Now, are you right? Are you wrong? Listen, there's probably better ways to do that shit, and setting yourself on fire is not one of them.
That's so ballsy, dude. Bro. That's so wild.
And dude, if you set your, not you, but if somebody out there in the street sets on fire, look, I'm not saving you,
bro. No, you shouldn't. If I set myself on fire, we could put this on the record. If I set myself on fire, let me go.
I'd be like, man, he had a rough day.
Yo, can you imagine surviving that? And now you got to walk around looking like charcoal all the time.
Dude, best thing that happened to him is that he died.
Yeah. I would think that's the goal, right?
I would, yes. If you set yourself on fire, you want to be dead.
That's a fucking painful way to go. That's why I'm like, bro. You're clearly, there's something wrong with you, right? Like mentally, like the to get that, like, I understand the protest to that extreme, to put yourself through something that traumatizing physically, you're not, there's something wrong with you, bro. Clearly, obviously, but there's just like, that's, there's more, no, than just back politics. That, yeah, yeah. That's more like it's hard. Like, no one takes that guy serious, right? Like, even if he's right, whatever, right, about his theory, it's so outlandish, his act, that you immediately dismiss him.
Yes.
Because you're like, no, there's clearly something wrong with you. This isn't something a reasonable person would do. A reasonable person maybe might pick it. You could argue that. I don't know. I wouldn't. But someone might go out there with a sign. Like, I got bills and shit, so I'm not going out there with a sign.
Yep.
But some people might. I get it. I respect it. That's your whatever, right, as an American. Yes. Setting yourself on fire is like,
that's the next level.
You need to be on pills or on a jacket. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts, bro.
That's so wild, bro. I don't know.
Dude, right, we got to end on that, bro.
The on fire?
Yeah, we got to end on that, man. Listen, tell them where they can find us.
That's still more heat than Kendrick has brought so far. At the Carbon Fuber Podcast on IG, on TikTok, at the Carbon FE Pod, X, Twitter, whatever the fuck you want to call it, at Carbon FE Pod.
X, goddamn it.
And then the Carbon Fuber Podcast on Facebook, on YouTube, and then all your favorite audio platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Geo7, Ghana, TuneIn, Pod, Pocket Cast. Yeah, all of it. Just search the Coming Food Podcast, or just ask your home device, your whatever your smart device is, your Google Home or your Alexa. Just tell it to play the Coming Food Podcast, and it will play us. So do your thing.
And as always, we appreciate you guys. We will see you next week.
See you next week.
Peace.